WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now.
Talking the news with Noam
on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me. 5 o'clock forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Clouds this morning, showers this afternoon, high 54. Tonight and overnight, the rain hangs around, low 47. And then Thursday, we'll have some rain as well, high 51. If you're walking out the door with us right now, it is 43 and cloudy in Havistraw up in Rockland County, 41 and cloudy in Berlin down in New Jersey, and we'll call it 41 and cloudy outside our Midtown studios right now. We got a lot to get to as we work our way up to the 6 o'clock hour, Sid and friends in the morning. Just a frustrated Mayor Adams yesterday. Those two big stories. One, the New Yorker, the strap hanger shoved in the way of a subway. And then, of course, the shooting death of an NYPD cop. Here was the mayor yesterday talking about this death of a man on the tracks in East Harlem. Just this random person who has mental health problems shoves a rider into the path of a subway on the 125th Street station.
If you want to participate in criminal behavior, we have now reached a point where there are those who are so emboldened by that they can keep doing their actions, that uniform no longer means anything. We've come a long way, but we have a long way to go. But we have to deal with these small pocket of people that have made up their mind they're going to hurt New Yorkers.
Yeah, but this is the problem, is they're, of course, hurting New Yorkers, in fact, killing New Yorkers. You have this 53-year-old Jason Voles. He's the one who was shoved into the path of the number 4 train, just trying to get home to his apartment in the Bronx. This train not able to stop as he was shoved onto the tracks. Voles' neighbors up in the Bronx say he was just this kind of quiet guy, but everybody in the building liked him.
I feel so devastated. He was an honest person. You know, he was a sincere gentleman, and, you know, he always respected me. He held the door for me open plenty of times when I came up the stairs with my wife.
Yeah, and then you have this creep, this murderer, who has mental health problems. Now we know that. His name's Carlton McPherson, 24 years old. Arrested, charged with murder yesterday. Multiple prior arrests. A long, violent past. I mean, no reason this person should have been on the street, but he was. And he was the one, police say, committed the crime. Yesterday, as we were telling you, it was Curtis Sliwa's birthday, and he actually celebrated part of his 70th birthday yesterday up at this station in 125th Street, and he says it's really bad up there.
Oh, stomping grounds for me. 125th and Lex, 6 uptown to the Bronx, 4 up to Fordham Road, where I started the Guardian Angels back in 1979. And this, that's right, this station is a hot mess because of everything that's upstairs, right? It is like Dante's Inferno upstairs. You got drug users, drug dealers, emotionally disturbed, homeless. And then they come down here to 125th. Yesterday, a poor soul gets pushed into an oncoming train at 7 o'clock. Emotionally disturbed guy, out of his mind. Probably hanging out upstairs. What's up?
Hi, man.
Got it.
I've seen you a while, bro.
That's right.
I've seen you, man.
That's right. I'm here at 125, where I spent a lot of time, right?
I've seen you in a while, man.
And I'm telling you,
good.
It's just crazy upstairs. So we got to get control of upstairs before you're going to get control of downstairs here. And earlier today, a woman avoiding the fare punched a New York City police officer, a male, in the nose, broke his nose. And this is just going to continue. So I think I got to get some guardian angels down here, wouldn't you say? Bring them here. Bring them on. That's right, at 116, too. You're right. This is where we made our reputation on the 4 and the 6 train in the Bronx in 1979.
Yeah, so I think Kurt is giving an excellent description of what's going on. Just at that subway station, but at subway stations across the city. That one, the homeless encampment up top, mental health issues up top. And then, of course, one of those people, that 24-year-old Carlton McPherson coming down below to push someone, just an innocent guy trying to get home in the front, in the path of a subway train, killing him. And then more tragedy, of course, was with this NYPD cop, Jonathan Diller, shot and killed. Two men likely should have never been on the streets as well, committed a bunch of crimes. If you weren't following this story, Jonathan Diller involved in this routine traffic stop in Queens, Far Rockaway, on Monday. And one of the guys in the car, in the passenger seat, pulls out a gun and shoots him. And the bullet hits just underneath his bulletproof vest, killing him. Here is more from the mayor talking about this as well yesterday.
The driver of this car got arrested with a gun less than a year ago. He's back in an incident that's involving the gun again. And so it is about a real analysis of what is feeding our recidivism crisis.
Yeah, so these bail reform laws, no two ways about it, playing into this. The 34-year-old murderer, alleged murderer, I guess I should call him, but Guy Rivera, accused of shooting Diller. He'd been in prison before. He's been arrested by the NYPD 21 times. 21 times he's been arrested by the NYPD, yet he's out on the street to kill an innocent police officer, cold blood. He was released from prison recently in September of 2021 after serving nearly 5 years for a criminal sale of a controlled substance. He previously spent 3 years in state prison for assault. It was released in October 2014. Neighbors in Queens, by the way, who are near this police precinct where the shooting took place, they are outraged like the rest of us.
All night long, I couldn't sleep. It's directly on them. It's on the state legislature and the assembly. They need to fix these problems.
The community is in an uproar, and we just pray for him and his family.
Yeah, so now they'll throw this guy away forever, but maybe he should have been behind bars forever before for the other crimes. 21 times he's been arrested.
They have no regard, no respect for the law,
yeah,
for citizens, for people.
Yeah, heavy rap sheets like that, I just don't get it, how they're out on the streets. WABC News Time 509 talking about the death of NYPD cop Jonathan Diller, murdered as he was on the job doing a routine traffic stop Far Rockaway, Queens, Monday night. So in his Massapequa Park neighborhood out on Long Island, people are just beside themselves, so upset. Flags half-staff, people bringing flowers over to his wife. He leaves behind a young wife and young child.
It's a nightmare, to be honest with you, but you just have to leave it into the hands of God and pray that, you know, everyone gets home safe at the end of the night.
And local business is offering all kinds of support to the family. Sharon Passante, she works at Tim's Florist. That's on Park Boulevard in Massapequa Park. She and her coworkers, they've made 200 police blue ribbons that they are putting up all over the community. She spoke to News 12.
For me, it's like, if this makes people feel better and let everybody know, like this family, Massapequa Park, Tim's Florist, we are behind you. We're going to mourn with you.
At nearby Umberto's restaurant, the owner offering free dinners now to Diller's fellow police officers who will be in the community this week, of course, to be with his wife and then for the wake and the funeral. And people coming into Umberto's knowing that there's going to be a lot of officers in Massapequa Park saying, hey, I will throw money to pay for their meals while they're here.
It's tough. I have friends that are police officers. The customers are coming in and they're saying, listen, whatever these police officers need or whatever they have, their meals, please, I'll pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, isn't it? Jonathan Diller grew up in Franklin Square, graduate of St. Mary's High in Manhasset. The wake for Diller will be tomorrow and Friday from 2 to 4. From 7 to 9, the Massapequa Funeral Home. You can imagine there'll just be thousands that will attend that. A funeral will be held 10:30 Saturday morning at St. Rose of Lima Roman Catholic Church with a burial to follow. Of course, we'll follow this story and have all that takes place leading up to the funeral right here on 77 WABC. The other big story that continues to be a big story is this cargo ship in Baltimore that lost power, rammed into a major bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge. This was early yesterday, about 1:30 in the morning, destroying the span in a matter of seconds, plunging it into the river. There were six people missing, presumed dead, who were doing construction work on that bridge at the time. Yesterday, we were talking with Ray, our new friend, who happens to live just about 2 miles away from the scene. He raced over to the bridge yesterday to give us blow-by-blow what was taking place. And I wanted to bring him back on this morning, just get a sense of what is going on there this morning. Good morning, Ray. Tell us the latest of what's going on in Baltimore. What are people's reaction to this bridge falling down yesterday?
Hey, good morning. Glad to be on. Glad to help you. It's just everybody is like they're lost for words. I mean, they can't believe one day the bridge is there and the next minute it's gone. And it's just hard to believe where you can see where, if you look at the footage, where the trucks did nosedives into the water, the contractors that were sitting in their truck on break waiting for this patch cement to dry while they was working on the bridge. And this morning, sea divers, the Coast Guard and the Maryland State Police have their dive teams all preparing to go in the water. And they have some barges coming with cranes to try to secure the bridge steel structure from collapsing anymore. But they haven't moved nothing. It's just the current is real rough and choppy.
Right, and they have to wait for daylight, I guess, to do that work, right?
They're going in at 6 o'clock, they were saying. And they got little cone buoys out where they went down with sonar and finding where the vehicles are. But they said it's possible that they could have shifted in the night with the current.
Yeah, so they just don't know exactly, and they don't know whether these workers were these workers physically working on the bridge at the time? Were they sitting in their cars? I guess it could be either,
no,
it could be both of those things, right?
They were sitting in their trucks.
Oh, they were. Jeez.
For the cement to dry.
Wow.
Waiting for the cement to dry, because I spoke to one of the contractors, and he said his supervisor tried to run to get to them, but by the time he couldn't get there, he got another employee off the site, and him, himself, he was telling me that them two made it off, but the other six, they were in the truck waiting for the work to dry.
Oh, and that's how those two survived, because they found two in the water who they were able to pull out and
exactly.
Were okay. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, but it's a tragedy. It's a real tragedy. I mean, there should have been more. But all the woulda's and shoulda after the fact, you know, it's not going to help it now. The bridge is gone, and there's six lives sitting in the water.
Well, Ray, first of all, thank you for your play-by-play for us yesterday, and then, of course, for coming back on to us today. And I have to congratulate you, Boops, because the information I kept saying, I don't know if you noticed yesterday, but you were saying, hey, there was a construction crew on the bridge, and I kept saying, well, you know, we haven't confirmed that. Every piece of information you gave us yesterday ended up being completely correct. So thank you for that, because you were getting information we were not getting. And boy, if you ever decide you want to become a reporter, I would hire you in a heartbeat.
Well, I was there play by play the same today. I'll be there for a while this morning here, and I'll wait for divers to go in, and I'll get back in touch with you.
I appreciate that. And Ray, thanks for staying up with us this morning, and we will check in with you again soon.
Thank you.
Sure. All right, we're going to get more into that story, too, because there were some great moments there, too, of police really potentially saving hundreds of lives. And we'll get into that before the morning's out. But first, 5:15, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk. Happy hump day. Good morning, Justin Ellis.
Happy hump day. Good morning to you, Noam Lyn. Starting on the ice at the Garden, Adam Fox scored 36 seconds into overtime, and the Rangers became the first NHL team to clinch a playoff spot this season, beating the Philadelphia Flyers 6-5 following a wild third period last night. Alexis Lafreniere had two goals, and Igor Shesterkin made 36 saves for the Rangers, who lead the league with 100 points after giving coach Peter Laviolette his 800th career win. Technically, the Blue Shirts secured their third consecutive playoff berth just by getting to overtime and earning 1 point after Detroit lost to Washington in OT. But after the teams traded seven goals in a frenetic third period, it didn't take long for Fox to finish the night in style with a pinpoint wrist shot from the high slot for his 15th goal, adding to the star defenseman's career high. Vincent Trocheck, Mika Zibanejad, and Johnny Brodzinski also scored for the Rangers, who extended their Metro Division lead to 3 points over Carolina, which lost 4-1 at Pittsburgh. Trocheck also had 2 assists. Up north in Toronto, Nico Hischier had a goal and 2 assists. Jake Allen made 42 saves, and the Devils beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-3 last night. Jack Hughes scored twice, including into the empty net, and Timo Meier added a goal and an assist for the Devils, who have won 4 of their last 5 games. Luke Hughes and Max Willman also scored for New Jersey. Jesper Bratt added 3 assists, and Curtis Lazar had 2 and we're out to the win. Also of note, Toronto's Austin Matthews scored his NHL-leading 59th goal in this game. No action to get to in the NBA, but the Knickerbockers will be back out there tonight, getting set north of the border in Toronto for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off against the Raptors. The Nets will be shooting up as well tonight, engaging in a 7 p.m. tip in D.C. against the Wizards. Ahead of the big day on the diamond tomorrow, when all 30 teams will be in action for this year's opening day, one familiar lefty arm has finally found his last-minute home for the year. Left-hander Jordan Montgomery and the Arizona Diamondbacks are in agreement on a 1-year, $25 million contract that includes a vesting player option for a second season, bolstering the National League champions' rotation with the postseason standout from the team that beat them in the World Series. Quite the poach there. Offseason news coming from the NFL, I should say, yesterday in the league's annual meeting, where NFL owners approved a massive revamp for the kickoff play, ultimately opting for a format that originated in the XFL. The new alignment rules represent the most significant on-field rule change for the NFL in years and are designed to reverse more than a decade of declining return rates while also lowering concussion rates. In essence, the format will move the majority of the kicking and return teams downfield to minimize high-speed collisions. It will go into effect for 1 year only in anticipation of possible tweaks over time.
What do you think of that?
I think it's fine. I have to wait and see what it looks like live, to be honest with you. It's going to look a little weird. The kicker is going to be farther, is going to be at his normal spot, where usually, you know, kicks off from. And then the rest of the guys on the kicking team will be about 15 or 20 yards in front of him. So to give them less momentum, I guess, running in to make those return tackles.
And the thought is, too, I guess we'll see maybe more of these long runs, run backs, you know,
right,
50-yard run back or whatever.
Right, and because they're changing, I guess it's a lot more close-knitted, if you will. There's less distance between the receiving team and the kicking team, so less room for that kicking team to build up momentum and speed moving into the receiving team as to avoid, you know, harder collisions. It could end up being really, really stupid, and that's why I think they're rolling it out this way, with the sort of that 1 year leash on it. At the end of next year, I would imagine there's going to be some pushback
to put it back in place.
Some more tweaks to it. I'm sure this is not the end that we'll see of the changes, I guess you will, of this kickoff rule. No, that's your sports. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 521. Let's go down to Washington. Supreme Court considering a case that could limit access to the abortion pill mifepristone. Justices reviewing this appeals court decision that blocks recent FDA changes that made the medication more widely available. The Solicitor General arguing on behalf of the Biden administration claims the ruling would inflict grave harm on women across the nation.
Some women could be forced to undergo more invasive surgical abortions. Others might not be able to access the drug at all. And all of this would happen at the request of plaintiffs who have no certain injury of their own. The court should reject that profoundly inequitable result.
Attorney Aaron Hawley argued the FDA unlawfully rolled back restrictions on mifepristone over the years.
FDA approved abortion by mail based on data it admitted was, quote, not adequate. That violates the APA. The lower court's decision merely restored long-standing and crucial protections under which millions of women used abortion drugs.
Yeah, so will this be decided this term? I assume it will be. So we heard the arguments. Now you can hear the arguments. We'll have to wait and see how the justices rule on this. The nation's largest dairy states monitoring reports of avian influenza in dairy cattle in Texas and Kansas.
If cattle are off feed or if they are sick, they're pulled from the milking string and treated and observed so that milk doesn't go into the normal pipeline.
Yeah, so they're telling us that we shouldn't be worried about this, which of course always makes me worry more about it. Wisconsin state veterinarian Dr. Darlene Conkley notes that the pasteurization process kills viruses or bacteria in the milk, so it would kill, I guess, this avian influenza as well.
And pasteurization would kill most viruses and bacteria.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with oat milk for a little while. Twice this month, custom agents on the Texas border have stopped the smuggling of monkeys in from Mexico. I mean, what else is coming across the border? Experts say there's a growing market for these exotic pets, and so they're sneaking them across the border with migrants.
There is somewhat of a trend with social media, people showing, oh, I have a pet primate, and then people are intrigued by the idea of having a pet primate because it looks fun.
Crystal Mathias, she heads the Primarily Primates, which is an animal shelter. She says having a monkey is anything but fun. They're messy and, well, most importantly, they're dangerous.
Texas has some really sort of lax laws when it comes to exotic animal ownership. There are a lot of exotic animals being held privately throughout Texas, and it's just very sad for them.
Amazing what's coming across the border. Construction is underway in Uvalde, Texas, on a new elementary school that will replace the building where 19 students and two teachers were murdered.
One very evident thing that you'll see in our design is you'll see a large tree that's in the front of the library.
Yeah, so essentially it'd be sort of a memorial. The tree will have two main branches representing the two teachers. There will be 19 smaller branches for the kids. The cost of the construction of this new school will be about $50 million.
The two main branches represent the two teachers who lost their lives those days, and then the 19 smaller branches represent the children. Like 21 birds, 21 rays of sunshine, 21 bumblebees, and those, again, represent the people that we want to honor.
525, let's go down to Florida. New bill, Protect Kids from the Harms of Social Media, is now law in Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis signing this bill in Jacksonville that forbids kids 13 and younger from creating social media accounts and requires the platforms to seek out and remove their profiles if they see them.
With things like social media and all this, you can have a kid in the house, safe seemingly, and then you have predators that can get right in there into your own home. You could be doing everything right, but they know how to manipulate these different platforms.
Now, it's expected there'll be a legal challenge to this bill that he signed.
Social media is the primary platform in which children are trafficked, in which pedophiles pretending to be children come after our children, and that more crimes against children happen on these platforms than any other venue.
Yeah, and actually a bigger part of why they tried to pass this bill and were able to is they say that the social media platforms play on the mental health of young teenagers, and I couldn't agree more. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has picked his presidential running mate.
I'm so proud to introduce to you the next Vice President of the United States, Nicole Shanahan.
Yeah, you might be scratching your head saying, who's that? I had the same reaction. The Independent telling a crowd of supporters in Oakland, California, that this 38-year-old attorney and tech entrepreneur is his choice for VP. Shanahan says she gravitated to the Democratic Party in her youth, but she believes it lost its way and it's not the party of peace and compassion. So she says that's why she's joined RFK Jr.
Many Democrats, we still believe in those ideals, but unfortunately as an institution, it has lost its way.
Yes, yeah, so this is what Democrats worry about, is that she's a former Democrat and she might peel off Democrats come November and sink the reelection effort for Joe Biden.
As you probably know, I became very wealthy later on in life, but my roots in Oakland taught me many things I've never forgotten. That the purpose of wealth
Yikes.
Is to help those in need.
Wow, they needed to handle the mic problem there. Meanwhile, pro-Palestinian protesters, they were interrupting Joe Biden as he was in North Carolina yesterday.
Keep patient with them. They have a point. We need to get a lot more care into the process.
Yeah, so he addressed those protesters saying he kind of sided with them, those pro-Palestinian protesters. That'll anger a lot of people. By the way, later today, it is the road to the White House right here on 77 WABC. I do a report on RFK Jr. You can hear that during the Bo Snerdly show this afternoon at 4 o'clock. The opening bell, it rings this morning on Wall Street after three major indexes closed slightly lower yesterday. Stock slipped for a second day after what had been a positive start to the session. At the closing bell, the Dow fell 31 points. S&P 500 lost 14. The Nasdaq dropped 68 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noam Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now,
Talking the News with Noam
on 77 WABC.
That is me, 533. Good morning. It is Tuesday, March 26th. No, it's the 27th. And why am I saying it's Tuesday? What is wrong with me? Let's start that over again. Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 27th. Did I say that at the beginning, too? Who knows? Anyway, your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. It's been a long week. Clouds this morning, showers this afternoon. High 54 tonight and overnight. The rain hangs around, low 47. And then Thursday, showers, high 51. I imagine you were yelling at your radio. What day? It's Wednesday, Noam. If you are walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. It's 43 and cloudy in Haverstraw up in Rockland County. 41 and cloudy in Berlin down in New Jersey. And it is 41 and cloudy outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right here in the city. So congestion pricing, it looks like it's coming. It looks like these legal lawsuits, these lawsuits that are trying to stop it, probably won't work. So not clear whether it'll start in June, but it's going to start at some point. So now the question is, what kind of mess is it going to leave behind? Not just the fact that you're going to have to pay $15 to go below 60th Street in Manhattan, but what will it do to the outer boroughs? And some city council members trying to figure this out as well. So in places like Washington Heights in Inwood, which is right near the George Washington Bridge, they're really worried what people will do is come over the George Washington Bridge and park in their neighborhoods and take subways down to Midtown so they don't have to pay the toll.
We have a lot of people that don't obey the rules. They double park.
Yes, so now you have people who, it's already hard to find a spot in those neighborhoods. They say it'll be a whole lot harder when congestion pricing starts. City Council Member Carmen De La Rosa, City Council Member, a worker, Lynn Schulman, says they're both proposing bills that would launch this pilot program, which would set up a residential parking sticker. And they've tried to do this before. But the thought is they should do it now, because if you live in the neighborhood and you have a parking sticker, then you'll won't have a problem, hopefully, finding a parking spot, because the people who come from out won't have that sticker and won't be able to park in the neighborhood.
You have the George Washington Bridge. We have the Manhattan Bridge. We have the Broadway Bridge. Our community is always at the heart of congestion.
And so now the thought is it's going to get a whole lot worse.
We are afraid that with congestion pricing, we will see more people driving into northern Manhattan, leaving their cars here, and then taking the train down to avoid the toll.
So in Queens, Lynn Schulman, who represents District 29, says residential parking permits are needed where she is in Kew Gardens because parking's already a problem. And she says, no doubt, people from Long Island going to do the same thing, going to come over to Queens, park their car there, so they'll take a subway in so they don't have to pay the $15.
They park on the street and they park in front of people's houses. There's not a lot of room in New York City to begin with, and particularly in the small neighborhoods in Queens. So this is something that could help residents to find parking where they live.
Not really sure why there's been this pushback. Someone, I'm sure, could explain it to me. I've done this story 100 times since I've been involved in the news business here in New York City. Every time one of these parking permit bills comes forward, it is thrown out. They say they think they may have enough votes this time to get this through. The idea is you'd pay, I don't know, $25 a year, and you get that sticker in your car, and then you'd be able to park on the streets, no problem. If you didn't have that sticker, no, you can't park there. Makes sense. WABC News Time 539. Let's go up to Yonkers. A 21-year-old man hit and killed by a hit-and-run driver in Yonkers. It was about 4 in the afternoon, Van Cortlandt Park Avenue.
It happened right after I went to the store. And when I come back, I see him laying on the ground over here. I'm like, yo, what happened to him? You know, and I'm like, did he get hit by a car or something?
EMTs raced to try to save the man. He died at the hospital.
That's a big loss for, you know, his family. It's sad.
Yeah, his identity not released pending family notification. So the vehicle involved in this incident left the scene, but it was located in Nassau County later by detectives. Yonkers police say a firearm, ammunition were recovered at the scene, but there's no evidence the gun was involved in the incident. They don't know the connection. They also say there was no relation between the victim and the driver, but they say their interaction wasn't random, which I asked about, but they didn't really explain clearly what was going on there. The sad part, of course, a 21-year-old dead. Also, this awful story out of the Bronx. Imagine you have somebody in your family with mental health issues, and so many times we hear from them, and they tell you they just don't know how to help that family member. And Here's just an awful story about someone who did. So police say this 46-year-old woman was found dead in her Bronx building. When police walked into this apartment, they found her on the living room floor. Her name is Selma McClain. She's a resident of this building on Westchester Avenue. They called it a domestic incident. And then we found out that she had let her 26-year-old daughter move back into her after she was let out of a mental institution.
Loved her daughter to death, literally. And it was they didn't have no bad blood with each other. This was a simple mental health crisis.
That's one of Selma's best friends who's just destroyed by the fact that her daughter allegedly killed her mother. It took place, they say, after Selma had sent her friend text messages saying that her daughter was hearing voices and it threatened her. And she didn't know exactly what to do.
I just feel like everybody should take mental health serious enough. And I feel like, you know, that's one thing that people shouldn't turn down. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, what a tough scene. And of course, the mother taking her daughter in to help her. And then the daughter ends up allegedly killing her. She is in police custody today. On a much lighter note, the Yankees unveiling the stadium's newest food options for the 2024 season. A Food Network personality and Bronx native, Christian Petroni's crispy fried meatballs, they're on the menu this year. Street Bird spicy yet sweet wings by Marcus Samuelson, the famous chef. They'll be available in Section 112 this year. Italian treats like Zeppoli's. They will be ruling some of the new offerings at Yankee Stadium this season. The head chef there, he's the guy who gets to sample everything, says fans will love what they eat.
Of course, because you're coming to a ball game, you want to have a hot dog or you want to have a nice sandwich. But again, we want to upscale it a little bit, you know, to bring us to 2024.
Yeah, so those fried Zeppelis will have cannoli cream, chocolate and strawberry sauces served in a mini souvenir Yankee hat. That'll be in Section 127. Obviously, you can have walked any of these. You don't have to be in the section. New York City butcher LaBelle's. They'll deliver a cornerstone steak sandwich from its left field booth. It's offering also filet mignon crispy tater tots. That sounds really good. Mighty Quinn's Chipotle barbecue chicken sandwich. The Grand Slam Butterfinger or black and white cookie shakes also will be available this season. That all sounds really good.
Like the selections that you get to choose from are not just the hot dog. You're coming for an experience, and that's the thing. We're doing life experiences when you bring your family to the ballpark. You know, the lasting memories that you have. You know, when you come here, then we want to capitalize on it with the food.
Yeah, so Goose Island, by the way, they're introducing a golden beard called New York's Legendary Ale that replaces the signature longtime loved pinstripe Pilsner from Blue Point. That'll be sold across Yankee Stadium this season. Hey, while we're talking about food, this has happened a few times over the last year or two. They've tried to introduce these vegan options into public schools. So a major change is going to take place at one Bed-Stuy school that's bringing plant-based food to their students and the community. Yesterday at PS 59, they had a food fair to introduce all this food to the kids. And they told them, they said, hey, look, this is a healthier option than eating, chicken nuggets every single day.
Some kids have diabetes, type 2 diabetes, and I don't want that for my family and me.
Yeah, so they made vegan options of all that kind of food. So people of all ages came to PS 59 for this sip and taste of these vegan treats, healthier foods. And most of the kids, they weren't happy to go to this fair because they thought it would be disgusting, but they said in the end they kind of liked the food.
I didn't really want to because I thought it wouldn't taste the same, but I liked it.
The kids are different eating style, and it shows them other things than burgers and french fries. They can try it out, and I like that it's something in our community, a change.
Yeah, and actually at the school, they're going to have cooking classes to teach kids to make this vegan stuff at home.
Everyone is surprised that vegan food can taste so good, but we're also going to teach everyone how to cook healthy foods. So we have three cooking classes coming up every Tuesday, starting next Tuesday, where families can not only taste the food, but can learn how to cook the food.
All right, we'll follow the story to see how long the vegan options stay in the cafeteria at PS 59. 5:45 now, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Ellick.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Starting on the ice at the Garden, Adam Fox scored 36 seconds into overtime, and the Rangers became the first NHL team to clinch a playoff spot this season, beating the Philadelphia Flyers 6-5 following a wild third period last night. Alexi Lafreniere had two goals, and Igor Shesterkin made 36 saves for the Rangers, who lead the league with 100 points after giving coach Peter Laviolette his 800th career win. Technically, the Blueshirts secured their third consecutive playoff berth just by getting to overtime and earning 1 point after Detroit lost to Washington in OT, but after the teams traded seven goals in a frenetic third period, didn't take long for Fox to finish the night in style with a pinpoint wrist shot from the high slot for his 15th goal, adding to the star defenseman's career high. Vincent Trocheck, Mika Zibanejad, and Johnny Brodzinski also scored for the Rangers, who extended their division lead to 3 points over Carolina, which lost 4-1 at Pittsburgh. Trocheck also had two assists. Up north in Toronto, Nico Hischier had a goal and two assists. Jake Allen made 42 saves, and the Devils beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-3 last night. Jack Hughes scored twice, including into the empty net, and Timo Meier added a goal and an assist for the Devils, who have won 4 of their last 5 games. Luke Hughes and Max Willman also scored for New Jersey. Jesper Brad added 3 assists, and Curtis Lazar had 2. En route to the win, also of note there, Toronto's Austin Matthews scored his NHL-leading 59th goal in this game. No action to get to in the NBA, but the Knickerbockers will be back out there tonight. Getting set north of the border in Toronto for a 7:30 p.m. tip-off against the Raptors. The Nets will be suiting up as well tonight, engaging in a 7 p.m. tip in D.C. against the Wizards. Ahead of the big day on the diamond tomorrow, when all 30 MLB teams will be in action for this year's opening day, one familiar lefty has finally found his last-minute home for the year. Left-hander Jordan Montgomery and the Arizona Diamondbacks are in agreement on a 1-year, $25 million contract that includes a vesting player option for a second season, bolstering the National League champions' rotation with the postseason standout from the team that ultimately beat them in the World Series. Off-season news coming from the NFL yesterday in the league's annual meeting, where NFL owners approved a massive revamp of the kickoff play, ultimately opting for a format that originated in the XFL. The new alignment rules represent the most significant on-field rule change for the NFL in years and are designed to reverse more than a decade of declining return rates while also lowering concussion rates. In essence, the format will move the majority of the kicking and return teams downfield to minimize high-speed collisions. It will go into effect for 1 year only in anticipation of possible tweaks over time. The kicker remains kicking from the same spot, and the returner will, I believe, be returning from the same area, and then each returning team will get to add one returner to the returning area. So you would technically, I guess, have two guys who are eligible then to return the football. We'll see how it works out. More changes surely to come. Noam Layden. That's your sports. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on the big stories of the morning. Continues to be a lot of talk, of course, about this NYPD cop killed in the line of duty. This a strap hanger shoved into the way of a subway train in East Harlem. The mayor speaking out about both these things.
If you want to participate in criminal behavior, we have now reached a point where there are those who are so emboldened by that they can keep doing their actions, that uniform no longer means anything.
Yeah, Bronx man charged in the death of the subway rider. He allegedly pushed onto the tracks, an attack that appeared to be completely unprovoked. Now we know who the victim is. 53-year-old Jason Vols, just trying to get home to his Bronx apartment Monday night when he was shoved by this 24-year-old into the way of an oncoming train. The conductor unable to stop that train.
I feel so devastated. He was an honest person. You know, he was a sincere gentleman, and, you know, he always respected me. He held the door for me open plenty of times when I came up the stairs with my wife.
Those are some of Vols. That's Vols' neighbor. He says he's just kind of a quiet guy that didn't mean harm to anybody. Meanwhile, Carlton McPherson, this 24-year-old who was arrested for shoving him into the way of the train, multiple prior arrests, none of this will surprise you, has a long and violent past, nothing surprising there. Unfortunately, he was still out on the streets. Curtis, you know, yesterday was his 70th birthday, but he decided, instead of celebrating, that he would go up to this station where this shove took place to sniff around and see what's going on.
Oh, stomping grounds for me, 125th and Lex. 6 uptown to the Bronx, 4 up to Fordham Road, where I started the Guardian Angels back in 1979. And that's right, this station is a hot mess because of everything that's upstairs, right? It is like Dante's Inferno upstairs. You got drug users, drug dealers, emotionally disturbed, homeless. And then they come down here to 125th. Yesterday, a poor soul gets pushed into an oncoming train at 7 o'clock. Emotionally disturbed guy, out of his mind. Probably hanging out upstairs. What's up?
Hi, man.
Got it.
I seen you a while, bro.
That's right.
I seen you, man.
That's right. I'm here at 125, where I spent a lot of time, right?
I seen you in a while, man.
And I'm telling you, it's just crazy upstairs. So we got to get control of upstairs before you're going to get control of downstairs here. And earlier today, a woman avoiding the fare punched a New York City police officer, a male, in the nose, broke his nose. And this is just going to continue. So I think I got to get some guardian angels down here, wouldn't you say? Bring them here. Bring them on.
Yeah, so many of these homeless, these people with mental health issues living near this subway station. And then, of course, this awful story continues of this NYPD cop, Jonathan Diller, on the job, making a routine stop on Monday night in Far Rockaway when the person in the passenger seat of that car pulled out a gun, shot him. The bullet hit him just below his bulletproof vest. Here was Mayor Adams yesterday.
The driver of this car got arrested with a gun less than a year ago. He's back in an incident that's involving the gun again. And so it is about a real analysis of what is feeding our recidivism crisis.
Yeah, how this guy was still on the streets. So 34-year-old Guy Rivera, the one accused of shooting Diller, he has been arrested by the NYPD 21 times, 9 of them felonies. He was released from prison in 2021 after serving nearly 5 years for criminal sale of controlled substance. Previously spent 3 years in state prison for assault, was released in October of 2014 for that. Queens neighbors who were near where the shooting took place outraged this guy was on the streets.
All night long, I couldn't sleep. It's directly on them. It's on the state legislature and the assembly. They need to fix these problems.
The community is in an uproar, and we just pray for him and his family.
The community should be in an uproar.
They have no regard, no respect for the law, for citizens, for people.
Meanwhile, this officer, young, 31 years old, Jonathan Diller, leaves behind a wife, young child in his Massapequa Park neighborhood, people flying flags, half-staff, bringing flowers to his home.
It's a nightmare, to be honest with you, but you just have to leave it into the hands of God and pray that, you know, everyone gets home safe at the end of the night.
And local businesses, people in this community, they can't do enough to support the Diller family. Shannon Penasante, she works at Tim's Florist on Park Boulevard in Massapequa Park, where Diller lived. She and her coworkers have made these blue ribbons to go up all over town to support the family. She spoke to News 12.
For me, it's like, if this makes people feel better, and let everybody know, like, this family, Massapequa Park, Tim's Florist, we are behind you. We're going to mourn with you.
Yeah, that florist donating all those ribbons to the community. At a nearby restaurant, Umberto's, the owner there knows that police officers are going to be in the neighborhood a lot over the next couple of days with the wake and the funeral and visiting with the family. And so he's offering free meals to any cop that wants a free meal.
That's tough. You know, I have friends that are police officers. The customers are coming in and they're saying, listen, whatever these police officers need or whatever they have, their meals, please, I'll pay for it.
Yeah, so that's the upside of which is still an awful, awful story. So
I've been to that restaurant a bunch of times,
right,
with Peter King. He's going to join me today. Both the Nassau County Police Commissioner, Pat Ryder, and Peter King will join me today. But Peter and his lovely wife, Rosemary, and Joe Cairo, Anthony D'Esposito. I've been to Umberto's with Danielle. It's a great restaurant. He's a terrific guy. And, you know, the whole story for me boils down to this mayor who yesterday said, well, this is not really crime, it's recidivism. And someone has to explain to this mayor, who I like less and less every day, that you pile up crimes in becoming a recidivist. In other words, I don't want to hear about categories. There's a dead cop. Figure it out. Go to Albany. Punch somebody across the face.
Figure it out. Stop categorizing crimes.
Do you remember when he first became mayor, one of the first things he did is he went up to Albany because he said he wanted to change these bail reform laws and then came back empty-handed. Nothing.
That's
nothing
right.
Changed.
They, and then, like, he gave up. Stuart Cousins slammed the door in his face. He stuck his tail between his legs and came back. That's not a tough mayor.
Yeah, meanwhile, we have this officer, flags flying half-staff. The wake for Diller is going to be Thursday and Friday, 2 to 4 and 7 to 9 at the Massapequa Funeral Home. A funeral going to be held 10:30 Saturday morning at St. Rose of Lima, Roman Catholic Church. And the burial will follow. Of course, we'll follow all of that right here on 77 WABC.